What's up, you reader fucks? My name's Kevin Strange.
And this is Travis.
And we're here from the Watching with Strangers podcast, because there's other things in the world besides books, too, you bookish fucks. We review cult movies. What kind of cult movies do we review, Travis?
All kinds of cult movies.
Like what?
Cultists of the cult, including Cult from the Future.
Cult movies from the future at kevinthestrange.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever other podcasts fuck, you fucks.
Hey, Kevin. What do you want to do about this podcast intro?
For reading to strangers?
Yeah.
I was thinking we'd download this broody-ass music. Then you'd be like, read to strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. I'd be like, read to strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. Then I shoot myself in the head.
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song.
Like, with LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Like, take a look, it's in a book, that shit?
Yeah, but like, reading to strangers.
Reading to strangers. Reading to strangers. No, that's a terrible idea. We're reading to strangers. It kind of feels like we've been sitting here for an hour already talking, doesn't it?
Are doing mic checks, one of the two.
Because what you guys done played yourselves, if you're not a patron yet, for the Strangeville Podcast Network, because we just, here, me and Jeremy, for Reading to Strangers, we just recorded an hour-long bonus episode just for Patreon.
Yes, we did.
Only at the $1 level. Yeah. $1 a month. $12 a year. Gets you access to our bonus episodes for our other shows on the Strangeville Podcast Network.
Pictures of our dicks.
Lots of pictures of dicks on there.
Wait, did we do the
pictures? Those are on our
$20 level.
Those are on our FetLife account. FetLife.com/readingtostrangers, where you get all the pictures of our dicks. Yeah, well, here we are. This is episode 4.
Yeah.
We've been doing this a little bit.
This is the
final episode of the final serialized part of Humans Under the Bed.
Oh, awesome. The great conclusion.
The huge conclusion.
Epic. This
epic conclusion. And we're going to talk about... I've been absent. I've been an absentina from the social media. For several months now. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about my decisions, why I left, the decision I made to leave, what happened, why. I'm going to talk a lot about my social media experience. But that's all in the second part of the show, right?
Yep.
First part of the show, we just...
updates, shout-outs to people that we need to shout-outs.
Yeah, so it's the last day of the month. And so patrons get their special shout-outs for being donating at the $1 level, for supporting us at the $1 level or above.
Yes.
You can support us all the way up to $20. And right now we have one patron. His name is JL Koch. And this is his shout out.
Yep, he's a strange savior, as we call the $20
level. $20
level
is a strange savior. The $1 level is the strange head dollar club. The $5 level is the $5 dudes. I always forget what the $10 level
you
is.
You do.
$10 holla.
$10
holla level.
If it's not, it's going to be.
And each level gets you different shit. But at the $1 level, we give you all kinds of stuff. We're 3 minutes into this pitch for Patreon, so they're going to tune us out if we don't get off of this shit. But yeah, basically, we gave our shout out to JL.
Check that out at patreon.com.
Patreon.com/KevinStrange. Kevin the Strange, which they've heard already at the... ad at the beginning. They'll hear again at the ad before the plug. Before the reading.
All right, so what's new in Strangeville?
Man, I don't think I even had another show going, did I? We were the only show on the podcast network last time.
Yeah, and now there's a couple more.
Last time we had a show.
Cheating on me, so to speak.
Oh yeah. Building an empire, my friend. Building an empire. I've been working steady. Hard on the website, on the Strangeville Podcast Network. I want to put more books out this year than I ever have. It's a fucking making another push, man. This is what I consider to be the third concerted effort I've put into this thing in my career. The first one was when I pushed really hard for 6 years with Hack Movies. pushed and pushed and pushed with that every day, worked morning, noon, and night. And then when I opened Strange House, that was my second push, morning, noon, and night, push, 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 work, 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 till my fucking balls fell off. And I feel like this era, this is the third era, third Kevin Strange era, where I've reinvented myself once again and am pushing once again towards victory. And this time we're going to do it, man. This time we're going to make it, man.
Sounds good.
So there's all kinds of stuff going on. I started this Strangeville Podcast Network where we do the Reading to Strangers show, where you and I, we do serialized,
we do
serialized readings of my books, of my fiction, and talk about news and events. And then we've been talking about controversial topics, but honestly, I don't know how much longer we're going to do that. Coming back from the...
Well, judging by what's going on in the world today, probably for a while.
Well...
be enough material to...
I started on a whole new podcast for that, though. The Ranting at Strangers podcast is to deal with politics, to deal with controversies that don't necessarily involve the publishing world. The Reading to Strangers podcast I use as my direct link to the publishing world, to talking about my favorite authors, my favorite publishers, my least favorite authors, my least favorite publishers, things that in the community that I think are terrible, practices that need to stop and need to be spoken out about. But I don't know how much, I mean, I guess that'll never, we'll never run out of those. I kind of want to make this, I kind of want to focus on the damn stories.
So when you were tearing up at Waffle House, you're saying that we're done.
No.
You got other people.
No, because I want all the co-hosts on all the shows to come together and do cross shows, cross promotion. I actually have remind me when we finish up, we have to do cross promo ads for the other shows. I did all the other shows.
Uh-huh.
I did cross promo shows for this show, so you're going to hear me and Travis talking shit on this show.
As long as Travis does some artwork that I'm included in.
Oh, there you go. Jeremy's all butthurt that our...
Oh, not really, but I thought it was funny.
Our third show, Watching with Strangers, is actually a... what is that noise? Is that your dog breathing? Yeah, I was like, what is that? Because it kind of almost sounds like a radio, like a low radio. For the second show, we do a... Travis and I do a... movie review show, and he did the artwork for it, and it's got a picture of me and a picture of him, and Jeremy feels left out because the Reading to Strangers just has a big old picture of me in there. So I didn't tell Travis to draw a picture of himself. I didn't tell him to draw a picture of me. Maybe I did tell him to draw pictures of both of us. I don't know. I don't remember, because I actually got together with Travis before we conceived this show. The first show that was going to be on the Strangeville podcast network was the watching with Strangers show, under a different name. And then I knew I wanted to do this though too, but I didn't get together with you till almost start time, only a couple weeks beforehand. I was like, hey, you want to host a show with me? You're like, sure.
Right, what are we looking forward to in this episode? And we'll cut to all the fun stuff at the end.
We still have another 5-6 minutes we need to kill here.
Oh,
the
okay.
Beginning part of the episode.
All right.
We're only 7 minutes in.
We'll talk about your other
business. We have all kinds of stuff. We have all kinds of stuff. That's the thing, is I'm not even done yet. On the website itself, we have all kinds of stuff going on. Every week there are new movie reviews, like written. I write movie reviews and recommendations for weird movies. I call it Kevin Strange's Weird Movie Recommendation. And we also have the... So this show is like the serialized audiobook. We also have the serialized novel, which we've talked about in previous shows. Vampire Guts in Nuketown is the serialized novel in print that comes out once a month. I also do short stories. Those come out. The last short story we did for this month was Jorek and the Shoggoth Steel. And we also have what just dropped in real time today, but will be last week in podcast time, is the third part of my erotic fiction serial, My Angry Roommate, which is a nice cuckold story. Jeremy believes that, even though I've written stories about incest cannibals, I've written stories about you know, guys who rape their girlfriends and fist their girlfriends to the point that they commit suicide. It's apparently my cuckold stories that Jeremy thinks are my actual fantasies.
Yeah, pay no attention that I know you.
the fantasies that that come about from my real life. So that's fun. That's out. Getting a lot of hits on the old website. People seem to like the. I'm gonna switch it up next month, but we'll talk about that next month. I have a tendency every show we do to blow my announcement load, right? Like whatever's gonna come for the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, I'd blow those announcements in one in one show, and then I have nothing to announce when we sit here and go to record the next week. I'm like, fuck, I already announced everything. But yeah, the website, kevinthestrange.com, man, it's popping off. It's got all those different types of things. I do top 10 lists of my favorite movies, just all kinds of stuff. And what's funny is the web traffic has dipped back down now that all the controversy is over. I find it funny that, that when people thought that they were ruining my career.
From what we got scheduled in February, I'm pretty sure they'll be back.
But all the controversy surrounding the comments that I made about the bizarro fiction community, about genre fiction in general, about the social justice warriors infiltrating the communities and ruining the communities, super outrage all over the internet. Fuck Kevin Strange, talking all kinds of shit on me, trying to publicly shame me, ruin my reputation. And I told him from the beginning, like, I'm not going to shut up. I'm just going to get louder. The more you do this, the more you try to silence me, the louder I'm going to get. And I've basically, it's been about 6 weeks since that whole thing started in real time. 7 weeks from when the podcast actually comes out. And I've watched my web traffic peak, and get bigger and bigger, more traffic than I've ever had. Like, traffic in a month being comparable to the traffic for the entire year. The previous year. That's how much traffic was coming to my website, because they thought that they were witnessing an author in some kind of meltdown mode. They love authors that that, you know, commit career suicide is what they call it. And it's always just when somebody gets fucking frustrated with the way they're treated and speak out about it, and then they get publicly shamed. They try to dig up some kind of controversial dirt on them and then tar feather them and send them packing. So they start trying to do this to me, and everybody, you know, they come to see the train wreck. They come to see the car wreck. They think that my career's over. As I just build a gigantic fucking podcast network, a network of my website, fucking, we're basically to the point where there's 30 days in a month. There's about 20 updates that happen on kevinthestrange.com right now. And it's funny that there are more updates and less traffic. Like, when I was only posting like a controversial thing a week and had all this traffic, they just thought that they thought they were killing me. They thought that they were ruining my life, ruining my career, taking away my ability to make a living, and they wanted to see it. They wanted to watch it in action. And when it failed, they lose interest. When I only get bigger and stronger, I'm getting ready to release a new book with another book right behind it, with a book of essays from the website right behind it, and 3 new podcasts. All this stuff happening, conventions, we're starting to book conventions for the year, we're going to start traveling, we're going to be doing these on the road with some of my favorite authors and personalities from horror conventions and stuff. We're going to be bringing them on and guest spots like Jeremy and I used to do on the road. It's funny to see that all of the looky-loos have lost interest. Oh, well, if he's not going to lay down and die, if he's not actually going to set himself on fire, this is boring. Yeah, I told you. From the start, you weren't getting rid of me. I told you from the start you were only making me stronger, that I was only going to get louder, that none of that fazed me at all. What do you think about all that, Jeremy?
I've known you too long. I know it wouldn't faze you. Generally, when you hand somebody a copy of a movie and say, hey, watch this, and the next thing you know, you're getting mouth raped by a plastic dildo, you're thinking that guy isn't going to be just shut down by saying mean words to him. Or,
you're talking about... I don't know if you laid that out. It kind of makes it sound like I mouth raped you with dildos. You're saying
the content
of my movies.
Yes.
When I hand you my movies and you watch it and you realize I have no shame
Okay. It's going to be hard. I mean, they would have to probably say that you're secretly a conservative Christian. That you go to church every Sunday and pray.
I would almost go to church.
Are you trying to trick me?
I would almost.
The ICP thing? When the ICP, everybody thought they were just selling religion in a different way. They'd have to do something like that and actually make it stick.
If people tried to like shame me into it, like thought that shaming me as into being religious would make me go away, I might actually go to church just to show I'm that stubborn. That's the, they
just
don't
to really, go take a picture. Look, I caught Kevin Strange
exactly.
in the church.
They don't,
actually just hide their hidden Christian message in all of this.
They don't realize who they're messing with. I mean, they just don't. They don't have any idea. And we're going to talk about that a lot more coming back from the break. But right now, we're going to get into the final part of The Humans Under the Bed. This is a culmination of everything that's happened before. The little monsters have now had the humans' plans have been exposed. Buckstack has gone crazy. Things are about to get nuts in the Humans Under the Bed world, and it's one of my favorite climaxes. I'm a climax guy. I know you like the sound of that, Jeremy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a climax guy. You can ask my high school girlfriend. I had a reputation. They called me
like for a mount or speed up.
They called me the Peter North of my high school, if you know what I'm saying. The volumous.
Ah.
Lots of
sticky.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, I don't know where I was going with
you're
that.
Busting a big load on the face of him.
I'm a climax guy. I put everything you've learned, everything in the story that you've been listening to or been reading, rest assured that everything that I've, all the little nuggets that I've dropped along the way, all the little drips
of baby batter,
all the little drips of baby batter have all been, all the pre-cum has been leading to this massive explosion at the end. I am a climax guy. My favorite part of writing is to get to the climax and to make it just the payoff be as absolutely cool as possible. And that's where we're at in Humans Under the Bed. We're at the climax. This is it. Crazy shit is
so
about to go down.
Don't say he didn't tell you it's coming, ladies, because it is.
So we'll be back after the break, and we're going to talk about why I fucking peaced out on social media. Why I'm not on Facebook. Why when you go to try to publicly shame me.
And I have a special surprise I saved for this second part, too.
All right. We get Jeremy's special
ask
surprise.
Ask you something live on the air, or you know, recorded live.
Oh, here we go. I'll find out after the break. We'll be back. Hey, you literate Homo sapiens, you motherfuckers. My name's Kevin Strange.
I'm Ben fucking Wolf.
And we're here from the Ranting at Strangers podcast. And what do we do here, Ben?
We talk about social issues, philosophical issues, and buttholes.
And fucking politics and shit, right?
Yeah.
We're the philosophy and
critical thinking podcast. We're gonna fuck your brain piece up.
We're here at what do we call this? The Strangeville Podcast Network to fuck your ear butthole tumor pussies. Peace. Ringbreast's body erupted in a violent spray of flesh and metal as Buckstack grew. Tens of thousands of the closest humans to him were smashed in seconds as he continued to grow. The monster bellowed a low, mournful scream for his mother and grew larger still. Buckstack was now taller even than the Overmind. His eyeball-tipped fingers touched the clouds. He stomped backwards and squashed 10,000 more as the army below him began to scatter. But the monumental beast did not purposefully attack the humans. He cried and he screamed, but his eyes were glazed and unfocused. He stumbled away from the war below, aimless, grieving, mindless. Dexie wasn't blind when he woke up this time. Dizzy, sure. Being knocked unconscious 3 times in 1 day was enough to rattle even the hardiest of monsters. And he was in trouble. He blinked the darkness away, only to find himself surrounded by humans. A lot of humans. Lucky for him, they were all paying attention to the hulking behemoth stomping away from them, each step like an earthquake, followed by thunder, when Buckstack screamed out for his mother. Dexie took the opportunity to scramble between the humans' legs.
He found cover under the corpses of several newly squashed people. If they saw him, they'd rip him apart before he could finish what he'd come here for. What he'd seen inside his father's mind. He had to get to Willick's, and fast, before Buckstack made it to the ocean. Willick's broke apart again. It was hard to control the minds of millions of tiny fly monsters, but it was harder still to control her emotions. Every part of every one of those millions of tiny monsters wanted to see the gun-headed human dead. Willick's imprinted all of her hatred and anger for the human race onto the being that killed her mother. She flung herself at the human, turning herself into a long, flying tendril, aiming for his stretched open grin. She planned to fly down his throat and turn him inside out, but he was fast. He dodged the attack, scooping up bits of monster and human gore off the ground as he did so, jamming the hunks of meat into the openings of the six guns on top of his head. When she turned in the air to strike for a second time, he fired all six shots in quick succession. His aim was good for three hits, blowing huge holes into Wellix's flying tendril body, killing thousands of miniature versions of herself. While each death hurt, the little creatures bred just as quickly as they died, mating with each interlocking little fly version of herself, giving birth to two monsters to replace every one that died. Just as Gunhead reloaded his weapons with gore, the flying tendril dispersed, leaving only a small trail of fly monsters in its wake.
"I want 10 flesh cannons brought over here at once to the place that I am wanting flesh cannons. We can't let this one get away to a place which we do not know of. She's much more powerful than her size lets us know how powerful she is, understand?"
Gunhead glanced at the human to his left.
"I said, do you understand what I asked about understanding what I said?"
The human turned its head and looked at him. Its eyeballs had been replaced by flies. Dexie heard the screaming. He chanced a quick peek out from under his pile of corpses. He saw Willick's 50 or so yards away, closer to the base of the mountain. She'd encased another human. She was battling with the one who'd come out of their mother's corpse. She had him pinned to the ground, using a swarm of fly bodies to slowly suffocate him. His legs jerked back and forth helplessly as his entire torso was covered in fly monsters. Dexie took the chance to scramble out of the corpse pile and take off running toward his sister. Most of the humans were forming flesh cannons and firing at Buckstack, who still stomped around in aimless circles. Most, not all. Dexie made it about 20 yards before a huge human with two additional arms grafted onto his hips stepped in his path. The little monster skidded to a halt. He gulped and put his hands out in surrender.
Now wait a second, you don't really want to kill me, do you? I'm just a kid.
The human smiled even wider than his pinned back cheeks forced him to.
"Narlak wants me to kill all evils, even tiny evils, which is what Narlak has been commanded to kill by his commanders."
Before the four-armed man could say more, a swarm of fly monsters attacked his head, completely enveloping it before scattering a moment later, leaving nothing but a clean skull to rattle around in its head cage. A second later, blood gushed up from its neck, and the whole big human fell on its back. Willick's reformed in front of her little brother.
Why didn't you kill him?
She asked, anger spewing from her voice. Her eyes were narrow slits.
It's over, Dexie. We've lost. All we can do now is kill as many of them as we can before they overwhelm us. She touched her brother on the shoulder. It's what Mom and Dad would want us to do. Dexie smiled.
It's not over yet, sis. Fly me up to the top of Buckstack's head. I'll tell you everything.
A flesh bomb exploded directly in their path, causing Willix to almost drop her brother. Dexie cried out and redoubled his grip on his sister's waist. They flew at eye level with Buckstack, who was still hundreds of yards away. Dexie told himself not to look down, but did so anyway, causing him to cry out again. For a monster with two flyers in the family, he sure was scared of heights.
Stop whining and tell me why we're doing this, Willix said, avoiding another explosion just off to their right.
Dexie took a deep breath and closed his eye so he wouldn't have to see how high they were.
I saw inside Daddy's mind, into his memories. Big Buckstack. He didn't die in the war. Nothing the humans have in their power, then or now, could kill him. He was just too big. His brain doesn't grow with his body. Once he gets big enough, he forgets what he is and just walks. Big Bucks walked off into the ocean and drowned, sis. That's why Buckstack's mom never taught him how to shift sizes.
And what exactly are we going to do?
Dexie grinned in spite of his fear of heights.
You'll see.
The general's two heads screamed in unison. They lived for war, had dreamed about this day their entire lives. The smell of evil blood on the air, even the honor of sending countless millions of their own kind to the great machine beyond, gave them unbridled joy.
This is it! We take down the giant! We wipe the globe clean of the evil which makes the globe not clean!
The generals looked around at the teeming multitude of humans surrounding them. There were enough. Of course there were enough. They would not make the mistakes of those weak, soft people who lived here before the evil. These humans were innumerable. They were legion. Dexie and Willix stood on top of Buckstack's head. Humans swarmed his body. Flesh bombs exploded all around him. It was useless. They hadn't so much as scratched his skin. That was the good news. The bad news was he was only 10 or 15 steps from the ocean. Dexie split his tongue and drove the prongs into Buckstack's skull, but they couldn't penetrate his hide any better than the human weapons.
I was afraid of that,
he said, putting his hands on his hips as Willix knocked a human who'd crawled up onto the giant's head back down onto his companions below, killing several more on impact.
So what now? Willix asked.
I don't know, but if we don't do it soon, our big buddy's gonna walk right into the water and he can't swim.
I've got an idea,
Willix said, snatching Dexie up, causing the little monster to scream and flail once again. The little fly girl zoomed straight up into the air, corkscrewed and headed back down toward Buckstack's head, dodging a flailing human who jumped off the giant's hand antler in an attempt to knock the children out of the sky. Dexie continued to scream as Willix made a beeline for Buckstack's head. Dexie was sure they were going to hit the lumbering beast when, at the last second, Willix tossed her little brother into Buckstack's ear canal.
You're welcome,
she yelled as his screams faded the further he tumbled into the giant's head. Her celebration was cut short when she turned around and saw what loomed before her. How did something that big sneak up on her like that? The generals were face to face with Willix, all those hundreds of feet up in the air. The thing was breathtakingly enormous.
Half a million humans must have comprised the skeletal structure alone, all interlocked together, their metal hands and feet welded together forever. It was a mega centipede. Its body was miles long, arching backward in the middle and forward again, way up here in the sky, forming a gigantic S. Row after row of flesh cannons, numbering in the hundreds of thousands, lined its underbelly like the legs of the bug it resembled, and fixed atop its head like a great horn were the generals.
"Fire at the thing in which needs to be fired at!" they screamed.
Willix couldn't dodge the incredible number of flesh cannons firing off at once. She had to break apart and skitter away as the explosions rocked Buckstack's titan body, causing him to stumble ever closer to the edge of the water. Something was wrong. Dexy should have taken control of the giant monster by now and steered him away from disaster. As more explosions knocked Buckstack onto the shoreline, Willix reformed and darted into the big beast's ear canal. She found her brother sitting cross-legged in front of Buckstack's little brain. His tongue prong was in place and his eye closed in concentration. His brow was creased and the little scaly monster trembled. Willix put her hand on him.
"Dexy, are you okay?"
He opened his eye.
"It's not strong enough. Even with me controlling it, his little brain can't stop him from walking. The explosions outside, what is that?"
"The generals, they know they can't kill Buckstack. They're just pushing him into the water. They know everything, Dexy. They knew exactly how to wipe us off the planet."
"They've had 500 years to plan, sis, but they didn't plan on 3 little kids ruining their party."
Dexy turned and faced his sister.
"We can beat the humans. Just do exactly what I tell you."
"The abomination is the last of the evil that is the abomination,"
the general screamed from the top of the mega centipede.
"The sea is its weakness. Push, push it into the unfathomable depths of that which is its weakness."
Buckstack was now ankle deep in the water. The mega centipede was right on top of him. The shoreline was completely obscured by human bodies. They waded into the water, singing songs of glory and death as they swam out to the mega centipede and climbed up its towering body, only to crawl into the barrels of the innumerable flesh cannons to be shot into the indestructible hide of the abomination. If every single human on the planet had to die to kill the last of the evil, that was just fine by them. Maybe the trees would sing the songs of their glory. More cannons exploded, driving Buckstack deeper into the ocean, now nearly up to his waist. The big thing was still crying and blubbering about its mother when the flies began pouring out of its ears. Willix replicated and replicated some more. Buckstack was shoulder deep in the water. Soon, there would be no way to turn him back. He would drown where he stood, and then this war would really be over. No sooner would she replicate enough little versions of herself to cover the big monster's head than the mega centipede would fire off another 1,000-round volley of the flesh blasts, incinerating all of her work. This happened again and again, frustrating Willix to no end. She was about to give up. And then the cannons stopped firing. They'd come too far out into the ocean. The humans couldn't swim out this far. They were all drowning from exhaustion before they made it to the mega centipede. The generals screamed, their fury shaking the entire titanic creature.
Swim, swim for your lives, as though glory depended on your swimming.
This gave Willix just enough time to replicate herself over Buckstack's whole head, then his shoulders. Then she grew three sets of arms made of fly monsters from his long torso under the water. She concentrated. It was difficult sinking all the minds of all the billions of tiny flies covering the giant's body. If she lost focus, she would certainly never find herself among all of those little monsters again. And then it happened. Working together with Dexy, with much effort, they managed to turn the great beast around in the water. The generals unlocked their feet from the megacentipede's head. They climbed down its back, stepping on faces, backs, and elbows, ignoring the pained protests from the interlocking humans they stomped on. They stopped in front of a flesh cannon, reached down, and ripped one of the humans from the structure, tearing the helpless man's arms out of socket in the process, due to the fact that they were welded to the person above him.
"For the glory of the death, which brings me glory!"
the armless man screamed as the general stuffed him down the cannon's barrel, melting him down instantly, blasting his remains toward the abomination. The single shot did nothing to stop the towering beast, which now trudged back through the water toward the mechanical being.
"We have come too far to lose after we've come so far,"
the generals bellowed, scrambling back up to the megacentipede's head. No sooner had they locked themselves back into place than a gigantic fist covered in flies swung directly at their faces. The generals ducked, barely avoiding the blow. They locked their arms and finally their two heads permanently in place, allowing a series of nanobots to weld their bodies to the creature's frame. Their brains took full control of the giant centipede. Now they saw from the eyes of the millions of humans comprising the gargantuan machine, felt what they felt, heard what they heard. As soon as the two-person being finished orientating themselves with the mega-beast's nervous system, the abomination's gigantic, fly-covered hand shot back out, grabbing the mega-centipede around the throat. In response, the generals commanded their miles-long body to thrash up like a whip, smashing into the abomination's head, sending the titanic evil back another 100 yards closer to the abyss that awaited it below the waves. Flies covered the vast space inside Buckstack's head. They continued to multiply exponentially, now by the millions every minute. Soon they would cover Dexy as well. He panicked when the flies began to swarm over him. He tried to pull his tongue free of Buckstack's brain, but the prongs held fast, almost as though Buckstack wouldn't let him pull them out.
"Don't fight it, Dexy!"
millions of Willixes said as the flies filled the brain cavity entirely.
"This is the only way. You know this. You wanted this."
Now flies crawled into his own head, massaged his own brain with the relaxing words of his sister. He no longer panicked, no longer cared about his own insignificant little life. He, Buckstack, Willix, they were all one creature now, one glorious monster known as, what had the humans called them? The Abomination. Their minds were perfectly in sync. They no longer thought as three separate entities. Their memories, their rage, their sadness melded together into one unstoppable giant. The megacentipede was wrapped around their face, trying to choke the life out of them. Impossible! The abomination took a step toward the shore, then another. That's when the centipede changed. Its segments shifted, creating two pairs of long legs while maintaining its noose-like tail. It more resembled a scorpion now. With these modifications, the human-machine hybrid was able to pull the abomination off balance and send both titans crashing underwater. Below the surface, the giant machine made of men changed again, splitting its long tail into two segments, each digging into the sediment of the ocean floor, pulling the fleshed beast further underwater as it permanently anchored itself beneath the waves. The abomination's fly carapace began to drown. Whole pieces of it broke off and floated back toward the surface. Air bubbles escaped its lungs as it fought to break free from the mechanical titan. But the generals and their millions of humans were not immune to the water either. Part of its vice-like legs began to drown and loosen their grip. The generals were close to unconsciousness themselves. Waves of panic swept through the machine giant.
Glory comes to those who would drown to see the evil drown at the hands of those who would drown for glory.
The generals thought into the minds of each of the humans struggling to hold their breaths.
Just hold on a little longer.
The abomination braced its arms against the sediment and arched its back, allowing it just enough space to smash down on top of the machine creature, killing thousands of drowning humans, causing it to loosen its grip that much more. More flies died and washed away as the three-minded monster swam in and out of consciousness. Another minute, and it would die as well. The generals spat out a lungful of stale air, then another. The abomination lashed out with its fists, tearing off segments of the machine in one last desperate attempt to break away. Air bubbles streamed from its mouth as it choked, still unable to swim to the surface. Then the machine creature spasmed. Its legs kicked uselessly in the water. The abomination held it fast, pinning it to the ocean floor. The two faces of the generals mouthed the word glory in unison and then went slack, the remaining air bubbles from their lungs trickling out of their mouths and noses. The generals were dead. The war was over. The monsters had won. Victory was short-lived as the abomination let out its final lungful of air in a vast stream of bubbles. In seconds, it would join the legion of humans in death. It was calm in that moment, ready to accept its encroaching demise, knowing it had wiped out the human race again, preventing them from taking back the world the monsters had won from them so long ago. Its final thought? Would there be glory in the afterlife for monsters? Or would the humans hog it all for themselves? That's when a gigantic arm reached into the water and pulled the titanic monster back to the surface. The abomination puked seawater on the beach. The few thousand humans left alive on shore ran for their lives, choosing to scuttle back under the rocks they'd crawled out from rather than face the glorious death they'd so recently sung about. Without their leader, they were as useless as a colony of bees without their queen. Already, the fly monsters were replicating, reforming across the surface of the abomination's flesh as it rolled over, breathing in huge lungfuls of air. After several minutes, it opened all 10 of its reptile eyes atop its hand antler head. What it saw made its breath hitch in its throat. Had it actually died down there, deep in the ocean? Was this heaven? The Overmind. After 500 years of silence, it had chosen to stand up. Now it stood over the abomination, offering a hand to the fallen mega monster. The abomination took its hand and rose to its feet. It still had to look up to meet its savior's gaze. The Overmind's mountainous head loomed in the planet's lower atmosphere. Its huge glowing eye cast a red hue over the entire northern hemisphere. Its body was slender, its six arms long and lanky, each ending in a hand the size of city-states, its legs taut and muscular. The abomination looked up in awe, then fell to one knee. "Master," it said, shuddering in ecstasy at the sight of the most horrible of horrors, the creator of all monsters.
"Rise," the Overmind said. Its voice shook the earth enough to cause tectonic plate shifts. Tsunamis roared across the surface of the ocean, washing away continents. The abomination did as instructed. "Walk with me."
The two titans strode the Earth's surface, causing earthquakes and volcanoes to explode in tribute to the two godlike beings. The abomination looked into the Overmind's mountain face. "Why did you let them live, Master? Why let them slaughter our entire race?"
500 years ago, mankind blessed me with life. I, in turn, created my own. But try as I might, I could not create a being as powerful as myself. I became lonely in my omnipotence. Even gods are limited by their own ego, I suppose. I was forced to be patient, to let the nature of this world, the nature of life, carry on at its own pace. I let the humans live so that my creations could breed, so that the humans could breed their hatred for me and my children. I hoped that when the time came, when nature pushed back, my children would be strong enough to survive, would be strong enough to do what I could not.
"Create a god," the abomination said, finishing its master's thought.
"And what a beautiful god you've created, my child."
The Overmind knelt down and kissed the abomination on its lips.
"Come, let us leave this planet to fester and die. Its worth has run its course. We have more gods to create, worlds to conquer. Maybe the two of us can create a being powerful enough to worship ourselves. Wouldn't that be something?"
With that, the Overmind opened at the chest, revealing a hollow cavern. The abomination stepped inside its master's body without hesitation. The Overmind grew wings made of trillions of little fly monsters and launched itself off the earth into the unknown blackness of space.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Kevin.
I got a great idea for a new Patreon ad.
Let's hear it.
You know how people like to talk about my dick on the internet all the time?
Not really, but go on.
Let's jerk off on each other's dicks right now.
No.
Why not? Are you trying to friend zone me or something?
Pretty much.
Is it because I'm fat?
No, I'm a chubby chaser, but it's okay.
Where can we go?
You can go to www.patreon.com/KevinTheStrange.
What can we find there?
you can find ways to donate to all things Kevin Lou Strange.
For as little as a dollar a month, right?
Yes, sir.
And right now you can download my erotic horror story, My Angry Roommate, right now before anybody else.
Yep, just for a dollar.
At Kevin the Strange, no. Patreon.com/KevinTheStrange. Wah! And we're back.
Now that Kevin Strange's climax is all over her face, chest, and neck.
The pearl necklace of fiction, if you will.
Yes.
It's finished. Humans under the bed. It's done.
Yeah.
The Overmind has come back to life. The little monsters have grown into a giant Voltron-esque fleshy beast named what did I call it? I haven't listened to the thing. It's called the Abomination.
The Abomination.
The Abomination. They've grown. They've come together. They've worked as a team with all their little monster powers to become the Abomination and fight off the evil cyborg humans. And they've flown off into space with the Overmind to create new life on a new planet. It's a pretty cool story. I like that story.
Yeah.
Our origin episode on that story has got a ton of hits. It's like the second most downloaded podcast.
Oh, that's awesome.
That we have.
Since we totally are talking about episode one.
The most downloaded episode is our second episode, episode two. Why Edward Lee? What would happen if Edward Lee was a social justice warrior scapegoat? Which is, you know, it's a controversial topic, and I assumed it would be. But the episode three, as of the recording of this podcast, hasn't come out yet. And the white guy survival guide for cons. You know what I'm going to use as the thumbnail for this episode? Do you remember the Too Fly for a White Guy Offspring video?
Yeah.
With the fucking guy, the white rapper guy? I'm going to take a thumbnail of him, and that's going to be the thumbnail for the episode. That episode actually drops in real time tomorrow, but it's the last episode you guys heard. So I wonder how the white guy surviving a con, especially in this climate, because as of in the real world right now, Donald Trump got elected sworn in, inaugurated yesterday as the 45th president of the United States, and today is just a fucking cesspool of liberal tears and marches for no reason. And
well, it's because we've been keeping women in chains, apparently.
This whole patriarchy thing is rearing its head again. The social justice warriors have doubled down. Tripled down, quadrupled down. I mean, it's insane. Women are out there, and men, and their cucky men are out there marching for equality in the Western world.
Because we're pretty much like Saudi Arabia.
We have every right.
Mm-hmm. You got women have
every
to be escorted,
right.
Beat with sticks if they show an ankle.
Every right. They have that. Anyway. So I wonder, in that climate, in this week, as millions of women march for equality that they already have, I wonder how a podcast called How to Survive a Convention for White Guys, when we are considered, you know, they're trying to trump us up like we are the Trump us up. They're trying to trump us up like we are the, you know, oppressor. We are the, we somehow have this stranglehold,
power,
this magic stranglehold
privilege.
on the stranglehold of privilege on all women and all minorities and all people of other sexual orientations. It's madness. Anyway, so it's going to be fun to see the reaction of that podcast. This podcast, of course, not as controversial, not controversial at all, really. It's just me kind of explaining why I quit social media, why I walked away from Facebook and Twitter, why I have no interest in ever going back to those fucking cesspools. But you had a special question.
Yes, I was going to see if we want to offer our fans feedback. I set up a page on Facebook called, you know, Reading to Strangers, so that people can bitch at us back. I think it'll be quite entertaining.
Well, you'll hear it from Jeremy, but you won't hear from Kevin, because Kevin's not on there.
Yeah, Jeremy just got back on.
Yeah. So until Jeremy gets fed up again with the with the freak show that is social media, you can contact us at what?
It'll be Reading to Strangers.
Facebook.com/readingtostrangers.
at it and definitely flame us and talk about all the reasons why I'm a terrible person and you shouldn't, no one should buy my books or even listen to any of the words I say.
If you like us too, go ahead.
Oh, well, yeah, but nobody likes us. Because as a very
you want to try to explain my male white privilege, I'd love it.
As a very unsuccessful self-published author once said, there are very few disciples of Kevin Strange left, don't you know? There's nobody buys my shtick anymore, whatever that shtick is. Nobody buys into my stuff because I'm not a liberal, and I don't. I actually do consider myself a liberal. I consider the people that call themselves liberals right now crazy Marxists, is what I call them. We are going to, while they're marching on the streets for the equality they already have, what you don't understand, gang, is there's a whole bunch of us working to take the name liberal back, to take the ideology of liberalism back to the moderate centrist spot it's supposed to be at to begin with, while the Marxists go crazy, and we're going to force that name on them. If you're going to be Marxists and you're going to read directly from the Herbert Marcuse handbook, you're going to call yourselves Marxists. You're not going to hide behind liberal. You're not going to hide behind progressive. You're not going to hide behind those terms, because those terms, you can't rob the definition of something that's well established. Liberalism is not Marxism. You're Marxist, you're crazy people. The more you talk about crazy feminism, the more you talk about all the rights you already have.
You can't take a word based off a word like liberty and just try to rob everybody else's liberty.
And then use political correctness to pressure companies into firing people, into stopping the selling of products. One of the interesting things that's happening right now... I don't know if are you familiar with the website FetLife? I made a joke about it on the special Patreon only podcast, I think, or maybe it was the beginning of this podcast.
It was the beginning of this one, the dick pics.
Yeah, well, yeah,
we
yeah.
Doubled
yeah.
up on the Patreon.
Are you familiar with FetLife?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, FetLife is in serious danger right now because the companies that process their credit card payments have cut them off. They're saying that because they have sexual images on their site, that they're somehow violating the law. They're not violating any law.
On the internet? Sexually explicit sites on the internet?
Yeah, sexually explicit sites on the internet are apparently violating a law, and these credit card processing websites are choosing to discontinue services. So FetLife can't take payments for membership payments anymore. This is how censorship works
it's all about fetishes. I mean, the last girl I dated, she was put hooks through her body, and she showed pictures of that.
I got a hook for her. Anyway, that's how censorship works in the Western civilization. The government isn't going to censor you. Your peers are going to censor you. The credit card processing.
Companies, now I don't have to pay my Pornhub membership. Is that what I'm hearing?
They'll do it to Pornhub too. They'll do it to Pornhub too. Pornhub will go out and fucking they'll discontinue all that
and
free
all
porn.
All that money is made or now I guess illegally or whatever they're trying to claim it is.
Oh, they're going to keep that
all
money.
The porn sites.
They're going to keep that money. They're not going to. They're going to shut the accounts down. Keep all the money in the accounts is what they're going to do. Discontinue use of the accounts. But that's not what. But there's a third thing that happens. There's a third type of censorship, and it's only just now becoming a really big problem. And that is one of the main reasons why I left social media. And that is social media censorship. Facebook has rolled out something called the fake news option, basically, where you can...
Because that's where you go to get your real news.
You can choose... Yeah, right. Exactly. Social media. So if you're being influenced by things you read on social media, you got bigger problems than whether or not you're reading fake news. But anyway...
Unless they're just planning on taking, like, the Washington Post and Fox News and CNN off Facebook.
Absolutely not. Maybe Fox News, because that's another reason that I left social media. This election cycle taught me a lot of things about a lot of things. One of those things was that Zuckerberg and the guys that own Twitter and all the other social media owners are political activists. And they're liberal political activists or Marxist political activists, and a lot of people blamed Zuckerberg and Facebook for Hillary Clinton losing this election. And they are blaming them because social media is where people spread the WikiLeaks documents from John Podesta's emails that painted Hillary as a crook, that painted the Democrats as
Satanists,
as
drinking urine,
as all kinds of crazy things, all kinds of crazy things. Hashtag Pizzagate. And so, as a response, Zuckerberg immediately released this statement saying that he was going to roll out a new option that allows for users to flag any post as fake news. And apparently, Facebook has hired a bunch of liberal fact-checker sources like Snopes to vet these posts from Facebook. Like, if it's linked to Fox News or Drudge Report or InfoWars, then Snopes and several other sources that are super left-wing get to decide whether or not that website is a source of fake news or real news. And so once a site like InfoWars or Drudge Report or FoxNews.com is labeled as a source of fake news, they're all articles, all links to those websites get blocked as fake news, or what they do is they get covered. And so as you scroll through your news feed, it'll say this post has been, or this, you know, this source has been vetted as fake news. Do you wish to continue? But it won't show you the post until you've clicked, yeah, I still want to see it. So they formed a censored wall in front of content that basically is that has political ideology in opposition to liberal Marxist social justice, politically correct culture, in the guise of trying to vet the posts for facts, you know, fact checking them, which is absolute rubbish. It's absolute bullshit. And once you employ a censorship tool, that tool will immediately be abused. Yeah. Just like when George Bush implemented the Patriot Act, it was an attempt to speed up the process of vetting and punishing terrorists. The Patriot Act was immediately used and abused by Homeland Security
and the DEA.
And the DEA to immediately turn it on American citizens that had nothing to do with terrorism. They invented the term domestic terrorism out of nowhere after this was implemented. And the same thing holds true.
Said that all drugs supply the, you know, terrorism.
Absolutely.
So we have that grower that's actually probably in Portland. just saying, there's probably one or two there. He all of a sudden became a funder of terrorism. So they were allowed to look through his computer at will.
And so these tools are going to be used exactly the same way. And I just won't be a part of it anymore. I won't be a part.
No, we want to be flagged as fake news on Kevin the Strange. That'd be great.
I'm sure it will be.
Because they'd have to click just to see if we were talking shit about it.
I'm sure it will be.
Brady's Mark Zuckerberg.
I've often wondered, like, as I continue to post these, like, sensational headlines, like, is Edward Lee, what if Edward Lee was an SJW scapegoat? I've often wondered, how long is it going to take for the temptation of someone in the Bizarro community to flag my site as fake news?
Halfway through February.
Halfway to February, right. We'll get to that in a second. So, with that in mind, like, this idea that Facebook has now rolled out censorship, Twitter has now begun to block accounts that disseminate news that is considered to be conservative or considered to just be anti-progressive. They've been blocking accounts like Milo Yiannopoulos. They you remember that weird kooky CEO from that medical company that, like, increased the price of AIDS? They or not AIDS
the
drugs
price.
The price of AIDS drugs, HIV
man,
drugs.
I get AIDS, but I just can't afford it.
Well, apparently he's got, like, he had some obsession with some journalist woman, and he had, like, his background on his Twitter was like a collage of pictures of her. And he was, like, sending her creepy, weird tweets, private tweets. And they blocked his account. They blocked his whole
not
account.
Not for trying to get people.
Not for increasing the price of HIV drugs.
But because he got a little creepy.
But because he was apparently sexually harassing a female journalist. And I say that sarcastically because, again, when you weaponize a term like sexual harassment, it gets immediately turned into a social weapon against anyone.
Yeah,
you throw that out
of
anywhere.
Internet. You can put dicks in people's mouths. You should be able to.
It's the internet, and that is, you know, I don't know where to start with this. I want to start, like all of my ranting, I want to go back to the very beginning and spend 30 minutes setting up how I got to Facebook. How I got to Facebook. But all I want to say is this. I will jump as far ahead and do this as fast as possible. When I started Hack Movies, people love when I started, like, this motherfucker is just all my stories, like, back in my day, except I say back when I ran Hack Movies. Listen, MySpace was my bitch. I used MySpace for all it was worth. We had auto post robots that would harvest friends, post our trailers on their walls. We would get tens of thousands of views on our trailers on YouTube for our movies because MySpace was our bitch. We used it as a promotional tool, and that was it. Nobody knew who I was. Nobody knew and when I say they don't know who I was, like, they didn't care who I was behind the scenes. They knew I was a low-budget, offensive horror comedy film director, and that's all that mattered. And my pictures were, my face was on everything, just like it is now, but the social aspect of MySpace was so much less than it is on Facebook. MySpace was a tool to promote.
Which is saying something, because you actually could pick how many favorite friends you
had. Yes. When everything switched over to Facebook in 2009, I was a late bloomer. I was a late subscriber to Facebook because we got such good results from MySpace, and I was on MySpace from 2005 to 2010, so for 5 solid years, and there was never once any kind of controversy, any kind of drama. I never saw anybody get publicly shamed off of MySpace. It was just a place to promote. People didn't care about what they were doing in their personal lives. All they cared about was, are you showing me music? Are you showing me movie trailers? Or what? It was a way to share media. It was a media sharing site.
Well, yeah. And look how many bands it helped.
Yes, it was the place to promote. And that's how we found bands. That's how we found movies. It was a place to share media. And as we flipped over to Facebook, and as Facebook started demanding that everyone use their given name and shit for their account, and was like, and you could no longer be an alias, you could no longer be a public figure. They really went after drag queens. They took away drag queen identities, and they made them post their their Christian names instead of their drag names. And for a lot of people, that was a big problem because they were outed to their friends and family who they wanted to be closeted, and they wanted to participate in the drag culture, but they didn't want that to be their whole identity. They wanted that identity, not necessarily a secret identity, but they wanted that identity separate from their
plural identity.
Yeah, they wanted plural identities. They didn't want it to be what made them them. And Facebook has sort of
Facebook got all pissy. I made an account one time called My Hand. And I tried to put myself in a relationship with it. And, like, literally in 5 minutes, there had been somebody that I just sat there and watched all the new accounts. And just had a picture of my right hand. And I got flagged and taken down in 5 minutes.
Yeah, so we're not allowed... We're not allowed those. They say make a page, and then they throttle your fucking views.
Oh, you can only make a page if you got money to pay them, because exactly. Their promotion shit's fucking horseshit.
It totally is.
If I like a page, I want to see their shit in my newsfeed.
Absolutely.
They should have to pay.
You have to pay just to get your own.
Because there are people already doing that. I see this one dick with the pink background. I don't even know what he is or whatever on my fucking newsfeed all the fucking time now. I'm like, who the fuck? Oh, it's a promoter.
Yeah. Paid post.
Yeah, so you got some way to pay to promote your shit. You shouldn't have to pay to promote the shit people are coming and liking your page
to see anyway. And so over the years, they've done this kind of thing, and their attempt to monetize their platform has really put people's personal lives right out there. And the culture itself has sort of assimilated to this. And so this idea of public shaming, this idea of screenshotting your private messages. There's a girl that I follow. I don't follow her anymore. I followed her on Instagram, and she has a sex account where she wants to get PayPal money from you to see pictures of her tits and ass. And her profile picture on Instagram is her ass. It's a naked picture of her ass. And the other night, she posted a dick pic on Instagram. I was like, what is this? and she had gotten the dick pic in her private messages. Her picture is an ass. She got a dick pic in her private messages, screenshotted it, publicly shamed the guy, posted his dick and the name of his account, and said, get this guy. Get this guy. Trying to publicly shame this guy. So she's got a sex account.
We should have asked her for money.
She's got a sex account, and she doesn't like to get sexual pictures back to her. That's how this culture has evolved.
That's fucking
and this
insane.
Is, and this is where we went. We went from, again, we went from this badass social sharing network called MySpace, where...
I bet she has a good relationship with her father. That's the problem.
We went to this totally invasive type of social sharing network where our personal lives, our personal relationships, the relationships we have with our families are all right there on display. Mm-hmm. Even if you have your family hidden from your feed, you still interact with them. And so they see the last names that are in common, and it's so invasive. And people have taken that to mean that they can, it feels, MySpace felt like going to a club. Going to a club and promoting your shit, handing out flyers, yeah. Which I would do in person. I would hand out flyers. I felt like MySpace was the digital extension of my ground promotion. Facebook today feels like high school. And getting involved in this writing community has has made me so fucking miserable. Getting involved with Bizarro and Small Press Horror over the last 6 years has made me so fucking miserable because I feel like a kid in high school where everything I say, the way I dress, the way I choose to talk, if I choose to share a band that I'm into, you know how much shit I've gotten for being a juggalo over the years from snobby ass writers?
Yeah.
Who write fucking shit vomit books? Who they are the juggalos of the writing community. You're talking about people. You're talking about people. The writing community at large ridicule Bizarro as being infantile and sophomoric and way too obsessed with bodily functions, which is exactly what the music industry accuses juggalos of being to the music industry. And yet Bizarros act so fucking stuck up towards juggalos like they are any better. Like, the shit that they produce, the sophomoric fucking shit that they produce, is any different. I actually, one of the last months I was on Facebook, I actually had a Bizarro, a guy new to the Bizarro culture, he had added me, and one of his Facebook update status posts was, how many Bizarros are into Juggalo music, because I feel like it's a match made in heaven. And my only response could be, you have to understand that everyone in literature is stuck up their own ass, even Bizarros. Even Bizarros believe they're part of an elite culture. They believe that they believe they're elitists.
They're the only ones that got it figured out. Everybody else is moronic.
So I've even taken tons of shit for the type of music I listen to. Do you know how many people cared that I was a Juggalo when I made movies? I put Juggalo references in my movies. I have Juggalo characters. Nixon and Hogan are straight up and down full-blooded juggalos, and nobody cares. The fans of my movies aren't juggalos. They don't care. They don't give a fuck that Nixon and Hogan are juggalos. They're funny. They don't care. What I'm saying is it's such a little cliquish, close-minded fucking community that you get into in the writing community on Facebook. It's all about those Facebook groups, man. It's all about being, like, if you're a Bizarro fiction writer, it's all about joining those groups that have 150 people in them, 250 people in those groups. I think they may have gotten up over 1,000.
I don't know about that. I haven't seen any of them like that. When we were working together with your former enterprise, I was on a couple of them. And
couple hundred, right?
Yeah, I would say the biggest one was probably almost 1,000, I would say.
And so if you're a Bizarro author, you just get in those little fucking groups and you hang out and you fucking gossip and you post shit. You hardly ever write anything, but you sit and gossip about each other all the fucking time. It's like a fucking high school class. Seriously, Facebook groups are like I had to go to school every day, and one of my classes was Bizarro fiction.
Which makes no sense because there is room for that in the actual business model of Facebook. They do have private groups. You know, when I was at an MMA gym, we had a private group.
There is a private group for Bizarro Con. what's non-public.
Yeah.
But it's just the same thing. All
or
the
a
groups,
secret group.
All the, yeah, it's a secret group. All the groups, though, just post the same fucking thing. And so it's like going to class every day and having to go and deal with all the assholes, all the people that hate me, the preps and the jocks and the stoners. It's like it's all these different little cliques of writers. And for years, I was in a depression over having to deal with these people. And a lot of people don't realize this, but I walked away from the Facebook Bizarro groups 2 years ago. This whole thing, me leaving social media, has been a deliberate step-by-step process. And people, if you've paid attention, have seen me leave before for months and come back. And I've always come back because I've always convinced myself that being there, being on Facebook, is the only way to promote my books. But this whole thing that we've talked about ad nauseum in our first episode, the whole big dust up with the Bizarro culture, the Bizarro community, that pushed me off of social media, made me realize that I could get people to come to my website. Everything that I could post as a fucking status on, here's the difference between me and any of those fucking Bizarro assholes, Jeremy. I can take something that would be a Facebook status, make a website post about it, and get 500 fucking people to come and look at it. To my website that then promotes my podcast to them, promotes my merchandise, promotes my books to them, promotes all my newsletter to them, and they come there to read what I have to say. Whereas those little fucking skinny ass, dirty haired, wannabe fucking punk rockers that want to cut Bizarro guys that want to fucking drop little snide comments on my shit, they don't have a fucking website. They don't have 500 people that'll come and see what the fuck they have to say. So they have to be there. They're locked into social media. They're locked into Facebook because the only way they have an audience is if they're on social media dealing with that bullshit every day with the cliques and the high school drama bullshit. I don't have to. People will follow me to see what I say. That is the fucking difference. And it's always been that way, Jeremy. One of the things that pisses me off so fucking much about this whole Bizarro situation is that I elected to put myself in that community. I had a fucking fan base. I had fucking people that followed me around the internet to see what I was going to do next, to see what kind of art I was going to make next. I had a fucking fan base. And I chose the humble route. I chose to pay my dues, to stick myself into a community, and not, as egotistical as people think I am, I chose to be one of the guys. I'm here to pay my dues. I'm going to write my books. I'm going to write my stories. I'm going to submit my stories for publication to the little fucking yarns and the webs, to the little mags and the websites and the little anthologies. And I did. For years, I tried to pay my dues. I wanted to work my way up through the community, gain the recognition and accolades from my peers.
Which you did.
I did it at a fucking cost, man. At my own humility.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That... You know what I'm saying?
Oh, shit. They speak to the Patreon episode.
they treated me like I was a lot of them. A lot of these guys, again, that couldn't get 10 people to follow them off of Facebook, thought that because I was there being humble, showing humility, showing respect to the Bizarro culture, they took that to mean that their voice was as important as my voice. That their little fucking 3 years that they've been around Bizarro and their fucking little 17,000 words worth of fucking bullshit stories and novelettes that they've published have anything on the knowledge and experience and talent that I had before I ever stepped foot into fucking their little fucking community. And this whole thing, this whole dust up at the end of the year made me realize I don't fucking have to take it anymore. I don't have to. I've paid my fucking dues, and all I'm getting is disrespect. I've paid my dues. My voice has a fucking place in this community, and I'm sorry for guys that have been in this community for 10 years and don't even have 50,000 published words and have never gotten a single award for anything. You don't work, man. You sit on fucking Facebook in the fucking Facebook groups, and you fucking gossip about each other. And these little fucking douchebags tried to come over to my website and start posting in the comments on my website. I fucking blocked them off from my website. Get the fuck back to Facebook, you little fucking dork. You little dork with fucking 40,000 published words in a decade. Get to work. Write a fucking book.
Yeah, I mean, it just amazed me when you started pointing out how many, you know, they're actually focused on their art compared to
none of
focused
them
on Facebook.
There's seven guys in the fucking Bizarre community that actually write full time. Seven guys. and the other fucking 93 want to act like their fucking opinion on my fucking shit is important to me, or that it holds any fucking weight to me. They fucking nitpicked about my relationships. You know, I haven't posted publicly. I haven't posted any relationship I've been in for the past 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Because of what happened with my last relationship. You know how these people fucking treat me, Jeremy? They treat me like I've been single for 2.5 years. I've had no less than three or four relationships over the last 2.5 years that I never make public on social media because of what happened with my last relationship, because these fucking little weasels wanted to fucking peck at me and try to have a fucking opinion on my relationship, because the girl that I was in a relationship with, I got a job at a website that reviewed Bizarro books. So she became part of the Bizarro community, and so we were like a Bizarro couple. I was the writer and the publishing house owner, and she was the Bizarro reviewer. And when we broke up, these people thought that it was their business to tell me how I should act and react to my relationship ending. So I've never made a single relationship I've been in public since. And the way they treat me now, they treat me like I'm some kind of bitter single fucking asshole. Some single white male. You know, we talked about that in the previous episode.
Yeah.
The single white male episode about how to survive at conventions and stuff. That ain't me. I don't add my girlfriends to social media because I refuse to go through and be humiliated again in the way I was humiliated with the last public relationship I had, because I will choke a motherfucker who thinks he lives on the other side of the fucking country and he's gonna threaten me. Never met my girlfriend, thinks he's gonna threaten me by the way I choose to talk about it publicly on my social media.
Did he have at least nice white armor?
Exactly. Fucking white knight bullshit. I'm done with it. That's why I left social media. I'm done with it. I don't have to be there.
Yeah, I think you did a good job with what you do. Your website alerts everybody there's a new, you know, thing through the different social medias.
I auto post to social media for my website. That's as much as I'll ever be. That's as much as I'll ever be a part of it again. I'm experimenting with
you should
the.
Read my memes.
I'm so tired of memes. I'm so happier not having to see fucking memes all the time. I'm so happy not having to see these people's drama all the time. See, we're way over time. This is going to be a huge long episode. This is like an hour and 20 minute episode again.
All right, so we can end now.
What do we got next month?
Next month is probably what's
good. Well, next week, I guess. Next week is the beginning of a new month.
Well, it's my birthday.
Jeremy's going to turn 54.
54, yeah, 54. Bottom half's only 23.
You got a dick job?
I've actually tried to claim the moniker. I put dibs on it on social media for the Ringling Brothers Greatest Show on Earth for just my bedroom activity.
Ooh.
So, hey, if they're going to let it go, I'm going to fucking pick it up. Ooh. I don't care if it's true neither.
Damn. Our next book.
Oh, yes. McHumans.
We're headed into the McHumans. Now, if you listen to the Reading to Strangers podcast we did a few years ago, we've already aired this. This has already been...
But it's worth listening to again. It's a good story.
And most of you guys didn't listen to that, so... So this will be brand new to you.
Four people out there.
So...
Sorry, but we're doing something else.
It's going to be... And I'm doing it for a reason. Because starting next week...
Lovecraft.
Starting with February. February, gang, it's Black History Month. And in this cultural climate, where I'm considered a sexist racist no matter what I do and no matter what I say, I've decided to troll y'all for the month of February. For Black History Month, I'm going to tackle... All our shows are dedicated and focused on the scum, the scourge of the small press horror community, the racist
slave owner, the racist
icon himself, H.P. Lovecraft. We're going to talk about him. We're going to talk about different aspects of him. You've seen some of my posts on my website in the last couple months about the cowardly Lovecraftian horror community just letting social justice warriors walk all over them with the white guilt
and the racist shaming of Lovecraft. And so we're going to talk about that. Each week we're going to take another aspect of Lovecraft's life and career, and we're going to address that. And
well, I thought we were just going to sex black girls. That's what the whole point of it was supposed to be.
We'll get into that.
Show a little love.
We'll get into that next week.
I'm artsy fartsy. I'm a writer when it comes to sex.
We'll get into that next week. And since McHumans is a Lovecraftian story through and through, it's a story about a guy who travels to the sunken city of Relay and is forced to provide catering to Great Lord Cthulhu and his ritual to bring the other old ones over to this plane. I figured we would have a Lovecraftian story for the 4 weeks of February and then do 4 weeks worth of Lovecraft shows since it's Black History Month. So
well, yeah, and since no matter what us white guys do, we're going to be racist.
No matter what white guys do, we're racist anyway, so why
pander
not?
Or anything
why like that? Not?
I mean, I don't really have any black girls to sex, so if there is any listening, reading to strangers on Facebook group, just shoot me a direct message.
Till next week, gang. Keep reading.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0, http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.